Last week, Governor Rick Snyder named Macomb County Chief Circuit Judge David Viviano to the Michigan Supreme Court. Viviano replaces former Justice Diane Hathaway, who resigned in January under a cloud of scandal related to her involvement in a fraudulent real estate deal. Viviano's worked as a city attorney, he was also a Republican nominee for Macomb County prosecutor. Ron Bretz chaired the Criminal Law and Procedure Department at Cooley Law School in Lansing. He's a longtime Michigan Supreme Court watcher, and he joins us now to talk about the makeup of the Michigan Supreme Court in the Viviano era. Ron Bretz, nice to have you join us here.
Thanks.
This morning. What the court now has a 5-2 Republican majority. What might that mean for future cases?
Well, I think that the first thing to understand is that the court has had a Republican majority for most of the last 20-some years. We had a period a couple of years ago where we had a Democratic majority, almost majority for a few months when we had Justice Davis there, but he's gone now. So the court has had a 4-3 Republican majority for quite a while. This will make it 5-2, so it really won't change the party alignments on the court. I know we say they're non-political, but they are all nominated by parties. All seven of our current justices have party affiliations.
What do we know about Dave Viviano?
Well, that's kind of interesting. He's never been an appellate judge. He's been a trial judge for a few years in Macomb County. And ordinarily, the politically smart thing they say for a governor to do is to appoint a court of appeals judge to the Supreme Court. That gives him, the governor, another appointment to the Court of Appeals. You put a trial judge on the Court of Appeals, and that gives the governor yet a third appointment to the trial bench. This time, and by the way, last time Governor Snyder had an appointment, he did exactly that. He appointed Justice Zara, Brian Zara,
right,
who was a Court of Appeals judge, and that gave the governor
a couple more appointments.
This time he didn't do that. He reached down to the trial bench. So in terms of now soon-to-be Justice Viviano, we don't know what his appellate record is because he's never served as an appellate judge. He's been a trial judge. That's a very different kind of job. In that sense, though, the Macomb County attorneys I've spoken to who've appeared in front of him have given him high marks as a fair judge, a judge who will listen to arguments, will let you try your case, and tries to rule on the merits. No telling what he will do when he gets to the Supreme Court.
What do you make of Rick Snyder passing up the opportunity to appoint an appellate judge to the Supreme Court?
Well, I don't know. One could say that this is that Governor Snyder, not being a real lifetime politician, he's not going the usual political route here. One could say that he's trying to find the best person for the job. But let's not forget that Judge, soon-to-be Justice Viviano, is a member of a legal family that is quite powerful in Macomb County. His father was a judge. His sister is currently a judge. He's the chief judge of Macomb Circuit Court. And by the way, the chief judge is appointed by the Michigan Supreme Court. So they've already appointed him the chief judge down there. His family owns some very high-profile businesses in Macomb County. Anyone in Macomb County knows about Viviano's flowers.
Okay.
And longtime members of the Republican Party. David Viviano has been a member and a contributor to the Republican Party. So in that sense, yes, he found someone from his own party to appoint. But in another sense, the governor did not give himself a chance to fill three spots.
Right.
Just one. Well, perhaps two. He'll have to fill the Macomb bench seat.
The GOP justices sometimes view themselves as textualists,
yes,
which means that they interpret the law as it's written rather than bringing in their own subjective interpretations, I guess. And that's what all judges might argue is their role. Do you agree that's the case on the Michigan Supreme Court?
Well, I do agree that the leading philosophy on the Michigan Supreme Court is one of textualism. And from a purely philosophical standpoint, there's some sense to it. In other words, they say, we are not going to pretend the legislature meant X when they wrote Y. Okay? We are only going to decide the plain words of the statute.
Of Y.
What do they mean? And they actually look at dictionaries. Now, someone did a study once, because the U.S. Supreme Court, particularly under Justice Scalia, he's the grand poobah of textualism. He's written two books on it. And he says you have to interpret the Constitution, for example, textually. But some things simply don't yield themselves to textualism. For example, the Constitution says that no person shall be denied due process of law. But they don't tell us what that is. It's up to the court to decide what is fairness. Cruel and unusual punishment. No one tells us what that is. So it is up to the court to decide what is cruel and unusual. And so textualism doesn't resolve all issues. One more thing I'll add there is that I've spent much of my last 10 or 15 years of my career studying Michigan Supreme Court decisions. And I always delight when I find a decision where the textualists on the court, which is primarily the Republican justices, mm-hmm. disagree on what the pure plain text says. There's one case from a couple years ago where there's three separate opinions from three Republican justices, and they're all saying it means something different. So the reality is, every justice on a Supreme Court, in a state or in the national level, has to bring into the job the idea that they have to interpret laws that are not always written in the most artful manner.
What do you make of criticisms that were made 20 years or so ago by Governor Engler mm-hmm. and the whole Cliff Taylor era that started this thing of an activist court, though? Can you say that the pendulum swings in the other direction too far?
Yes,
occasionally.
Absolutely. Okay. In fact, I would say the court that became known as the Engler Court, as of 1999, he had appointed a majority of the justices on that court under the leadership of then Chief Justice Cliff Taylor. And that court declared itself to be believe in judicial restraint and judicial conservatism and rule of law, and yet they spent 15 years overturning just about every precedent from their own court. I did a study on this a couple of years ago, and I accumulated. They did over, I think, 1,400 years of their own precedent they overturned. And that's not judicial restraint. If you look up judicial activism, one of the first things you'll find is no respect for precedent. And I think most lawyers will tell you that the Michigan Supreme Court, through much of the first part of this century, has had no respect for precedent.
How interesting. Governor Snyder has, on a few occasions, asked the court for preemptive rulings mm-hmm. on issues like tax overhauls, the emergency manager law. He's also asked the court for just such a ruling on right to work before it takes effect in about 3 weeks. What might happen with that request? How do you process all that?
Well, I think that the court, no matter what their politics are, is going to be not anxious to take these cases up preemptively. It's very unusual. It's not done very often. And ordinarily, I'm just talking ordinarily, the appellate court, particularly the Supreme Court, would rather see a case work its way through the system, give other judges, give lower court judges a shot at it, see how they rule on it, and then we will take it up. With purely legal questions, okay, in other words, questions that don't require testimony, don't require witnesses, because you can't do that in an appellate court. If there's going to be testimony or witnesses, evidence introduced, that has to be done in a trial court. But if it's purely a legal question, does the law mean this? Does the Constitution permit this or not? That is the kind of question that can be resolved preemptively by the Supreme Court. I understand what Governor Snyder is trying to do. He's trying to save a lot of roller coaster is what he, you know, what if a lower court says it's unconstitutional, then a court of appeals says it's constitutional. Now we're going two different ways. We don't know what's what. And then we have to wait sometimes years for the Supreme Court to give us the final word. And even then, that might not be the final word. The case might end up in the United States Supreme Court. Right. So Governor Snyder's trying to short-circuit all that. And I don't see that as being a bad thing, but I also don't think the court's going to be real anxious to jump on it.
How long? I want to revisit this whole issue of Judge Viviano's lack of appellate experience. Mm-hmm. How long will it take for him to sit on the state Supreme Court before we start to get a read on that?
You know, it's hard to say. We have a thing we call a condition we call new judgeitis, where a judge
very scientific.
Yes, very scientific. This is how lawyers talk to themselves in the back rooms. But what we do is we'll see a judge who's never been an appellate judge be appointed to the Court of Appeals, and typically that judge's first authored opinion, okay, where he signs his name, I'm the one who wrote this. They're usually quite lengthy, quite lucid. They're usually they're shooting for a masterpiece their first time out of the box. And I would not be surprised to see the Chief Justice, who's now Justice Young, give new Justice Viviano an assignment to write a weighty opinion in a case that should be coming soon down the line.
Okay.
We don't know what he's going to be doing. We don't know. But I suspect he has already pledged that he is going to be consistent in his judicial philosophy with the current majority.
Very good. Longtime Supreme Court watcher Ron Bretz chaired the Criminal Law and Procedure Department at Cooley Law School in Lansing. This has been fun. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.